Welcome to Catholic Vitamins, your dose of spiritual supplements from A to Z. Catholic Vitamins, specially formulated to help you achieve optimum spiritual health. It's time to energize your faith, forget what lies behind, and press on toward the goal.
We've already won. Look at how far we've come. Let's fully embrace this change that is taking place.
Here are your hosts for Catholic Vitamins, Deacon Tom Fox and his lovely wife, Dee.
Well, hi, everyone. It's just the deacon and not the D. D is off doing a few other things this afternoon, and I'm going to try to put this together somewhat by myself. We'll miss her lovely company, and we'll see if we can get her back a little bit later on. Well, here we are, Catholic Vitamin U for Unload. Lent is a good chance to unload some of the things that you're struggling with, that you're carrying with you. Sin, some bad habits, some problems. And it's also a chance to unload some of the beautiful work that God has done in your life and to share that with others. And that's sort of what our guest is about today. Therese Ocker will be with us in a little while. This is Catholic Vitamin number 305. Gosh, who would have thought? And we're at about the 6.5 year mark. We look forward to more of these. We will not have Mariana and her missionary segment with us today, Mariana's Missionary Moments. We will have a little bit of prattle. And I'll start off by our prattle segment by talking a little bit about our Lenten journey. I guess the first thing I want to mention is Ash Wednesday. I'm sure that most everyone who would listen to this sort of podcast would probably be ones who sought out ashes on Ash Wednesday. As a deacon, I've been doing Ash Wednesday with priests for, 11 years now and more? And, probably more, yeah, because I did this some before I was a deacon. And one of the things that impresses me about Ash Wednesday, and it's very strange, priests will talk about it as well, is that we have people who present themselves for ashes that we might not see at any other time of year. I don't know whether they're from other churches or whether they are former Catholics who don't practice any faith walk now, but for some reason or other are intimately tied to the practice of seeing ashes on their foreheads. I hope that we can reach them. I think Father Lucero, our pastor, was impressed with the need to say something to people who he hadn't recognized when he talked about the importance of the Lenten journey, including going to Sunday Mass. And he invited those who might not think that it's necessary to go to Sunday Mass to consider it a holy day of obligation in their life every Sunday, and invited them to come, speaking of Father Lucero, on our Catholic radio station that we started here in our community. Father Lucero recorded a spot to welcome people back to the Catholic Church if they've been away, and I hope that reaches some hearts. So we're on our Lenten journey as we begin to record this segment of the podcast. It's the first Sunday of Lent, and today we heard about Jesus being tempted in the desert. This appears every Lenten first Sunday. And there's so many messages that we can take from that biblical story about Jesus in the desert with the tempter. One of the messages we can take is that the world is really the oyster of the devil. It belongs to him in the sense that he has power here on earth. He even was able to say to Jesus that he would turn the whole world over to Jesus if Jesus would adore him, the tempter. And the reality of that is shown in what we see around us in the world these days. Gosh, there's just such terrible things going on. Hold on to our faith. It's a beautiful faith, and it's a way to salvation. Dee was involved with the church library project opening today. That's one of the things that has kept her a bit. She and I guess three other ladies were involved in cleaning out our parish library. It had been a library many, many years ago, then fell into a sort of disrepair and disuse. So they brought in several new or old books, got rid of a lot of things that didn't belong there. And today, after the 9 and the 11 o'clock masses, they had ladies there to welcome people in. Father Lucero came after the 9 o'clock mass and actually did a blessing for the library. I was there for that. And kind of great to see some vitality getting started in our library in the parish again. I wonder if you have one. If you have one, be interested to hear how it's working and if many people use it. You know, I think a lot of people have gotten away from the use of books from reading. They do reading online or they'll do other things which are short and brief. And I'm just wondering how our library project will do. But the ladies have put a lot of work into it and we hope it will do well. Well, I guess that's enough for the first segment of Catholic Vitamins, Catholic Vitamin U for Unload. And I was telling Dee earlier that I just remain haunted by Audrey Assad's music. She's given us permission to play music from her new album, Inheritance. So we'll take a short break and we'll include some music from Audrey Assad.
Abide with me. Fast falls the eventide. The darkness deepens. Lord, with me abide. When other helper fail and comforts flee.
Of Audrey Assad music in my iTunes library, but I have a couple songs on the desktop, and that's one of the ones that I play all the time, Abide in Me. Oh, my heavens. Well, we have some feedback, Deacon Tom and Lovely Dee. I'm finally caught up with your Catholic Vitamins podcast. You've been with me at drive time for about 2 weeks straight now. Hey, I still love the show, and please keep going. Vita Scrabble starts with U, ends in D, six letters. The first word I came up with was united. It seemed like a good choice, but then to be silly, I thought of untied. As I pondered it and chuckled, I was reminded of Our Lady Undoer of Knots and realized that untied wasn't so silly after all, but I think I'll stay with united. And that came from Mike. He says, God bless. Mike, that's Mike Klett from the Coffee with Mike podcast. And I know that he particularly enjoyed the podcast that we did on Our Lady Undoer of Knots. And our special guest, who, Dee, you just came in. Who was our special guest for that?
Marge Fenlon.
Yes, thank you. Glad you're back, Dee. And speaking of podcasts to plug, so to speak, they don't do any payola anymore, do they? We should get some payola for plugging podcasts. We got an announcement that there was a relatively new podcast called the Catholic Convert Podcast. They have 17 episodes up so far, and they podcast from New Zealand. And I started to listen to one. I'm probably 10 minutes into it. then got distracted and had to stop listening. Dee, have you listened to any?
I haven't. I started to the other night, and I got distracted, too.
All right. Well, the gentleman that I heard on the episode that I listened to had a very New Zealand/Australian-sounding accent, and I don't know if that was Dan or not. I just don't have enough familiarity with the podcast. But if you are someone who is on your way to the church, or if you know someone who is on their way to becoming a Catholic, try the Catholic Convert podcast, which you can get from iTunes. Maybe go to their website as well.
And speaking of new podcasts, Danielle Bean has a new podcast called Girlfriends.
What is that about? I don't even think she
did. I haven't looked that one up yet. I've got to check that one out.
All right. Dee, in the first segment, I told people about your library startup. Any fun, nice, warm words to share about that? Yeah, I know you worked hard on it for a couple, 3 months.
We had numerous people coming by and going, you know, thumbs up. They really like the idea that we're doing this. And so I hope it gets used.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, well, we are ready for something that we promised some episodes ago. We're going to do a short segment from Sonia Corbett's CD called Healing the Father Wound. If you're carrying some baggage from family disturbances or hurts, this would be a good time to unload them. And Sonia is going to take a little bit of time to talk about the wound that she carried with her. And we'll come back from that, and then we'll bring up our special guest.
That Abba, that word Abba, it's Aramaic. It means daddy. And when I first heard that I should see God the Father that way, I was like, what? I was afraid of God. I pretty much felt that everything bad that ever happened to me was punishment, because that was my experience growing up. If I did something wrong, I was punished. And most often, after I was literally punished, then I got the silent treatment for sometimes months, and I'm not exaggerating. So it would, anytime God was silent, I felt criticized, or I felt like I was in the wrong. And anytime I was, I experienced suffering of any sort, I felt God was upset with me. So this whole idea of calling God daddy was not a good thought. So for some of us, that whole idea of our Father is not a pleasant one. I spent many, many years in the card aisle on Father's Day trying to find a Father's Day card that would both honor my dad and still be truthful. I mean it, because of all things that he gave me, one of the things he gave me was a real sense of righteousness and justice. You know, almost an overblown, not almost, a really overblown sense of justice. So that I was really self-righteous in a lot of ways. But I did spend a lot of time in that card aisle, and I would think, you know, God commanded me to honor my father. And so I was trying to do that. You know, I wasn't going to just ignore the Father's Day, but I could not give him a card that said, you're the best dad ever. I just couldn't. So that was the relationship that I had with my father. And so reading these kinds of scriptures, or hearing our Father, or considering that God is my father, was not a pleasant idea for me. And so my whole life really has been this excavation and this healing of this wound, all right? And some of us have those. And sometimes if we don't have them from our fathers, we have them from our mothers, all right? And so we share a woundedness. And even if we grow up in wonderful families with wonderful parents, we still share the woundedness of sin, so that sin separates us from that fatherhood and that motherhood and that communion, all right? And so St. Paul then says that the Spirit himself is who bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. All right, now if you have children, that was actually the thing that began to provoke me partly into trying to find help from God with this wound, because I didn't want to do to my children what my dad did to me, and I could see it happening already. I mean, my first baby in the crib, he would cry, and I didn't know why, and I'd done everything I knew to do for him, and I'd go, well, my baby's just not going to cry. I mean, you know, how silly. It was stupid. And it bothered me that I could already see that happening in me. And so I went straight to God in total fear. Please, 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 whatever you have to do, do not let me do this to my children. And so I was willing, because of my love for my children, to do whatever it took with God to get through that wound. Okay?
Oh, the deep, deep love of Jesus, vast unmeasured, boundless free, rolling as a mighty ocean in its full.
While I do miss Sonia Corbett, our scriptural evangelista, she did segments for quite a long while on Catholic Vitamins, and she's become so popular, so very popular.
Will we ever see her again?
Well, she sent a nice email to both of us the other day, and she said she was in California thinking about us, knowing she was very close.
And she always thinks about our dog Bandit, too.
Yeah. So, Sonia, we miss you, but thank you for letting us use from time to time some of your segments. And you can go to Sonia's website, www.pursuingthesummit.com. You'll find video of her there. You'll find audio of her there. And you'll be able to order her book. Of course, you can get it lots of other places. Her book, Unleashed, is a good read for Lent. Give you a chance to unload some of what you're carrying around by reading Sonia's book as well. Dear, in the first segment, I talked a little bit about Ash Wednesday and getting started with Lent, and I talked about the people who come for ashes who may not come at other times of year. Seems kind of different. I don't know if you've observed that, but let's talk about the beginning of Lent for you and I. What's on your mind for Lent?
Well, I think I mentioned it last time. I want to go up to Madonna House and make a Pustinia again, a 24-hour Pustinia, which is going into a prayer room, quiet, all alone, myself and God.
And what would you do in there?
Sleep.
Okay.
Well, among other things, yes, I would sleep. And God is fine with that.
I think so, too, yeah.
He figures if you sleep, you must need to sleep.
Holy sleep.
Yes, I like that.
Well, there's a Bible.
But there's a Bible in there, yes. So yeah. It's, you know, you're encouraged to delve into Scripture. And you're fasting also.
Bread and water and tea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I couldn't take in like a six-pack or something like that. That wouldn't be a good thing.
You don't take in your cell phone. You don't take in your Kindle. You don't take in your laptop. You don't.
Did you take in, by the way, you did this, what, once or twice last year?
I did it once.
Would you take in a notebook for writing anything?
I think I did have some paper with me, although I think they have some paper in the drawer for you if you need, in the desk drawer that's in there.
So we have people around the world who listen to us. Not that we're that big, but not that big a podcast, but we have people who live in different places who hear this podcast. Madonna House is around the world. They have 20-some field houses, and I can't speak in this podcast about whether all of them have a Pustinia prayer room, if you will. But if you go on the main Madonna House website, up in Combermere, Canada, they have information about their facilities, and you might be able to check it out.
You know, now that I remember, I did have a little notepad with me because I remember taking down some notes.
Okay, all right.
Of what I was thinking or feeling while I was in there. But you know what I was thinking about doing this year? Yeah, Pustinia is meant for you to pray for others.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Pray for the priest, pray for the church, pray for other people who need it. And I was thinking that notepad I take with me, that I might just jot down every person's name who enters my mind during that 24-hour period.
Wow.
As somebody to pray for. Oh, how's that?
Lovely. I hope your husband might be on the list. Well,
I don't know about
You're saying the word awfully quickly, and I want to spell it for our listeners so they know it's not an American word. It's P like Paul, P-O-U-S-T-I-N-I-A, Pustinia, and that is a Russian word which Catherine Doherty, the foundress of Madonna House, brought with her into her Madonna House lay apostolate program, and it means sort of entering the desert of silence. And today's, as I mentioned earlier, today's gospel in the church, the first Sunday of Lent, was Jesus going into the desert, the silence, except there he had some company, someone who spoke to him, and it was evil. And you might have a tendency to say, well, if I go into silence, I'm going to be all distracted and whatever, but you got to get all of that out of your system and spend time quietly with the Lord. Let him speak to you.
It's ever. I remember telling our listeners after I did it last year that it was just that once that door was closed, after I went in, I felt so peaceful. It was so, I sat down in the chair and it was just a wonderful feeling to sit there in the quiet peacefulness.
We might share with our listeners that the people in Madonna House have, most all of them have done this for years and years and years. Some of them do a Pustinia every week, some every month, and they have on their staff, usually older staff members, not necessarily, but older staff members who are called Pustinics, and they live in Pustinia for weeks at a time, and then will come out to spend time with others, either in their community or in the lay community outside of Madonna House.
This is exactly why Catherine Doherty introduced this concept into Madonna House, was for her staff to be able to take advantage of this these graces from doing a Pustinia.
Dear friends, we are fans. I hate to use that word. That sounds too commercial, but we are fans of, we are lovers of Madonna House. And our guest coming up in just a moment is a lady who told me offline that she had not heard of Madonna House. She thought she might have heard of Catherine Doherty. And I asked the people at the Madonna House here in Arizona to send her, our guest, a introductory book on what this is all about. So they are sending her a copy of Fragments of My Life, stories of Catherine Doherty and her journey towards Madonna House, her journey towards holiness. She's now up for sainthood in the Catholic Church. Well, this has been a nice little bit longer prattle segment. Dee, after a short bump, as we call it, or an intro, let's bring up our guest, Therese Acker. And I... As you heard at the beginning of the show, our guest is Therese Acker, a Denver area lady whose name came to me in a couple different ways. We'll get into some of that during our interview. Listeners to the show know that we have a little bit of a format. Vitamin A was adoration, vitamin B for beauty in the church. I was explaining that to Therese before we got started with our time together, and I might say that this lady might be approached as vitamin O for oxymoron or vitamin C for challenge. It's going to be a challenge to try and cover all of the dimensions about Therese, but I'm anxious to get into as much of that as we can. Therese, welcome to Catholic Vitamins.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be a part of it.
Well, we are too. We are too. Let me just say that I've done a little bit of... I'm trying to plan for our time together. I know that you came out of Southern California, that you went to Benedictine College. You have a degree in journalism. You might give me a grade off the air about my interviewing techniques when we're done.
And I'm taking notes on you right now.
All right. And a minor in art. And when I use the word oxymoron, I know that you have a devotion to... St. Therese of Lisieux, the little flower, and that you love shotguns, cigars, and drinking beer. I mean, I just how to put all this together in an interview is going to be fun.
Yes.
Well, Therese, let's start with you as a young person, I guess, in California. Tell us about your family of origin and the early years.
Yeah, so I grew up as the oldest of six kids. My family has always been really devoutly Catholic. We actually were all homeschooled. One of my siblings was not. He actually went to high school, but I was homeschooled the whole way through. And really, that was a decision my parents made because partly because the school system in California is not the best. But they also wanted control over how they taught us the faith. And that's just something we would not have gotten at all in any kind of public school system. So I grew up in my family knowing my faith really, really well, which was a huge, huge gift. I know tons of people don't have that gift. And my family is just really, really close. I actually, when my parents both went back to work, my mom was at home for a while homeschooling us. And then when I was in high school, she went back to work, and so I kind of helped homeschool my younger siblings, which was a really cool experience as an oldest kid. So we were just all really, really close. All of us know our faith pretty well. Of course, we're not by any means a perfect family or anything like that. But yeah, I just grew up knowing a lot, and my parents were actually NSP teachers as well. So I had another huge gift on top of that about knowing the purpose of human sexuality and kind of saved me a lot of heartache growing up, in this world where sexuality is just a huge, huge struggle for so many young people.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that was a huge, huge gift. So that's kind of my upbringing in Southern California. And we still, being homeschooled, we had a lot of experience with social activity. I know that's like one of the biggest questions I get hearing, telling people that I was homeschooled. They're like, did you even have any friends? but my whole family basically played a lot of sports, so that was kind of our interaction with the rest of the world. So we weren't like secluded or anything. We had totally a normal upbringing, just schooled a little bit differently than other people.
Therese, did you say where you were growing up? What part of California?
No, I did not. I grew up in the high desert area of Southern California, mainly in Victorville and Apple Valley. It's kind of a 2 hours or so northeast of like San Diego, LA kind of area. So kind of in between the big cities and Las Vegas.
How far from Hemet?
Was it about an hour and a half?
Oh, okay.
Like that.
Right. Have some family at Hemet, just a sidebar. So you finished homeschooling with mm-hmm. the folks. Sounds like a wonderful, if not idyllic, upbringing. What a blessing there. How did you decide where to go mm-hmm. to college and what did you want to do?
Yeah, so I was playing softball all through high school. I played pitcher and first base. And when I started looking for colleges, I was looking for ideally either a Christian or a Catholic school that was a little bit smaller where I could play softball. So I was applying to a couple of schools in California. And as I was deciding, it kind of came down between Benedictine College and one other school in Orange County. And Benedictine is the one that offered me more money to go there. So when I first visited Benedictine, I had kind of culture shock because coming from Southern California to going to a very, very small town, Atchison, Kansas, where this school was very, very different from anything I've ever experienced. So that was kind of the deciding factor in choosing Benedictine College. And I was really, really glad that I did choose it, actually. And initially, I wasn't super excited about going there just because of the small town factor. But it turned out being probably one of the best decisions of my entire life thus far. It's one of those schools that really changes who you are as a person. And every single semester, I just felt like I grew so much and really became the person that God has made me today.
Wow.
From going to that school. Yeah.
Gosh, another gift in your life. Holy Moses, that's great.
Yes.
And again, just as a mini sidebar, years ago, maybe when you were a glint in somebody's eye before you were here, I was in the computer industry and we moved from Washington, D.C. to Chanute, Kansas. population of about 10,000. So it was a big shock for us, but it was also a great blessing in a similar way to what you described, and very wholesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, it really taught me a lot about community. I realized coming from a West Coast that a lot of people in the Midwest have this sense of community about them, and they're very people family oriented. And that was something I totally had no idea about until I moved there for school.
Mm-hmm. So you did 4 years there. Any experiences related to your faith? I'm actually moving towards focus. I don't know when that enters your story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so actually right before I went to Benedictine, I had kind of a conversion experience. As I mentioned, I kind of grew up knowing my faith really well. But in my senior year of high school, there's a really big kind of tough period in my life. I was in the process of ending a relationship. And kind of in this process of this relationship ending, I was just really, really searching. And again, I knew a lot about God, but I realized that I didn't know God in my heart. I didn't have a personal relationship with him, which is something I think a lot of Catholics miss out on. And I think a lot of our Protestant brothers and sisters really get this idea of having a relationship with God and having a daily prayer life. And that was kind of when this all changed for me. I really started for the first time praying every day on my own, apart from our family prayer. Even if it was just for like 15 minutes of just reading the Bible, I was doing something on my own for the first time. So going into Benedictine, having kind of this conversion experience right before I went, my first year in college was really just like honeymoon stage of knowing God. I was going to retreats all the time. I was going to daily mass. And it was just a really, looking back, kind of an easy time of life. Where God is just really wooing my heart and winning me over, and just really getting to know who he was and how much he actually loved me, which is when a concept that God loves you, when you actually encounter that fact face to face, it changes your life. And then basically the next couple years, so I actually quit softball after my freshman year of college, which I am really grateful that I did because it really freed me up to be where I am now. I was able to focus a lot more on writing and art. And then throughout this whole process, God was just refining my heart and making a lot of friendships with really, really wonderful people. I am so, so blessed to have so many women who have formed me into the woman I am today, who just really called me to be better, helped me grow my prayer life. We're just walking with each other side by side. I realized coming out of Benedictine that so many people don't have the level and the depth of friendship that I've been able to experience at Benedictine. And I think a lot of people just kind of have this expectation that this superficiality with friends and just, you know, people that you just hang out with, that's what friendship is, and it's not. Friendship is something really, really deep and profound, and you help one another grow closer to Christ. So that was another huge gift while I was at Benedictine.
My heavens, I just am made tender by what we've covered with you so far, and this part has been beautiful. Let me just go back to this experience when you were finishing high school and you were ending, you said you were ending a relationship and that God started to become, Jesus became real and personal to you. Did something cause that? Was it the absence of the contact in the relationship, or did you have a dear God, if you're really there, let me know sort of moment?
It was kind of a number of things. It wasn't, I know a lot of people when they have a conversion experience, there's kind of like one specific moment where it just kind of hit them. For me, it was kind of a slower process. So this kind of, there's like this sense of emptiness inside me before the relationship was officially over. And I just kind of sensed that something wasn't there. And I knew something wasn't there, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. So kind of in the midst of realizing this, I remember the day exactly. It was a Mardi Gras / Fat Tuesday right before I graduated high school. So about 6 years ago to today. And I was watching these nuns on the Oprah show. It was the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist. And I had grown up with nuns all my life, really. I'd seen them around. I'd done all these things with the religious orders around where I lived. But seeing these nuns on the Oprah show, for the first time, I really felt like I was seeing people who possessed joy. And when I was watching it, I was like, they possess God. Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, it hit me like a ton of bricks that I did not possess God. So that was kind of a smaller, big moment for me. And after that day, I just remember feeling so anxious inside and so restless. And there's this like incessant searching for this thing, which is God, that I didn't have. And that's really what catapulted me into starting a daily prayer life and just throwing myself at wanting to know who God was, and wanting to fill this emptiness that was inside me that I hadn't really been aware of before. It really was there all my life, but this is the kind of the first time I'd really experienced feeling that pain of longing and wanting to know who God was. So that was kind of what started it all for me.
Therese, our little slogan associated with Catholic Vitamins is nourish your faith from A to Z. And our opening one third of our time together has just been so beautiful. And I hope our listeners are touched by your journey. Should we wrap up your time at Benedictine and then move on?
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
So where did you go after graduation?
So after graduation, I got a job with Focus. As I was looking for jobs, what I really wanted to do was go into a more secular environment because God just really put on my heart a desire to evangelize through the media. Just by producing good content, because there's so many voices in the world, and so many voices that are just doing it in a really preachy way, which doesn't always work for the rest of the world. So I kind of felt a personal call to just be a voice in the secular media that was just producing good content, good, true, and beautiful media. So I was looking for jobs, and I was mostly looking in Kansas City because I had a lot of friends there, and I just wasn't getting anywhere. I wasn't getting any interviews or anything like that. So I thought to myself, okay, well, I'll just look in a couple different cities and see how that goes. So I stumbled across a position for Focus in Denver. And Focus is a missionary organization that sends missionaries onto college campuses, and the missionaries stay there all year round. And they really, their whole mission is to evangelize to the students, mainly through personal relationships and doing Bible studies and doing what they call discipleship, which is essentially teaching the person that they're discipling how to have a relationship with Jesus, how to evangelize, and then teaching them to teach others to do the same thing. So it's kind of a ripple effect, if you will, of these missionaries reaching out to these students and evangelizing. So the position that I found was for the headquarters in Denver, and it was basically a position to just kind of be a part of the media and Focus. Doing emails and social media and blogging and that kind of thing. So when I found this position, I right away knew that I would have to fundraise my salary because that's what all missionaries in Focus and most of the church organizations do. So I was a little worried about that, but I applied for the job and I just really felt this sense of peace and this kind of call to not only evangelize, but to continue evangelizing through the media like I had this desire to do initially. So it was kind of a meeting of both things that God really provided for. And I ended up getting the position. And then that brings me to Denver now. And I still work for Focus at the moment.
So how long ago was it that you came to Denver?
So I graduated in 2014. So I've been in Denver for almost 2 years, year and a half now, working for Focus here at the headquarters.
So I have some things to say to get started with the Focus discussion. I think you knew from our setup work that we did by emails that we lived in Colorado. We were up in Estes Park. That's where I became a deacon. And while I was attending masses on weekends when I wasn't going to formation, deacon formation down in Denver, a young woman, on fire woman, came up and talked to our parish, not once, but a few times over the years. And we became sponsors for her, a delightful young woman. And part of our journey experience was to find out about the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. And we just thought this was awesome. One of the things that she had to do as a focused missionary was to find funding and support. So mm-hmm. our parish supported her, and some of our people, our parishioners, did as well. My wife, Dee, and I as well. Did you say that mm-hmm. you had to find some support for your work?
Yes. So I had to do the same thing, actually. All of my salary is completely fundraised. So when I got this job, I went back home for the summer, and I spoke at my parish as well, and I asked people in the parish to support me. So I called them up and met with them in person, and I talked to them about Focus and what we do and what the mission is and why we're doing what we're doing. And so I spent the whole summer getting support, mainly of the people either in my parish or family or friends, and some people that I had never met before, which was really a really cool experience, getting to meet strangers and share with them, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm excited about it, like, I would love for you to be a part of this with me. And that's really what the key is. As people who are part of a church, it is our job to biblically support people who are missionaries and to support their mission and to give of our own gifts that God has given us back to the church through supporting people like this. So it was really not only good for people that support me to be a part of this, but it was really great for me to be humble and to learn to ask for help, to recognize that I can't do this work on my own, and I need other people to support me, not only financially, but especially with their prayers as well. So it was a really humbling, really awesome experience to fully fundraise my salary.
Well, I want to promise our listeners that it was never our intention when we made outreach to Therese Acker to see if anybody would be called in their heart to help her. But at the end of our time together, if Therese is willing, maybe she'll give us a way that somebody might make outreach. Maybe you might consider this to be a Lenten opportunity, or even if you hear this much later, to consider doing something to support an on-fire evangelist for Focus Ministries. So I know Focus has been in existence for over 15 years. It was started mm-hmm. by a fellow named Curtis Martin. I heard that story early on. And you've sort of explained how it works. Can you give us some feel now for the scope, the outreach of Focus?
Yeah, so it's been around for a little over 15 years now. And we're currently on 113 campuses across the country. So there's roughly about a team of four people who stay on each of those 113 campuses all year long. And there have been tons and tons of vocations coming from Focus missionaries. I think there's over 400 people that have gone on to become either religious or priests or consecrated after being a Focus missionary. And we reach over tens of thousands of students. There's just so many students a part of our Bible studies or who have gone to our national conferences. Last year, I was able to go to one of our national conferences. It's called SEEK, and it was held in Nashville at the Gaylord Hotel. And there were almost 10,000 students that were there, and it was just phenomenal to see so many young people encountering Christ for the first time. Through talks and through the adoration and through just the relationships that they have with the missionaries there. It's just phenomenal to see so many people coming back to Christ in this really rough world that we live in through the ministry of Focus. It's been really awesome to be part of it, to watch it happen.
So I've been writing notes for show notes, and I wrote down 113 campuses and 400 mm-hmm. vocations. Did you say how many missionaries are on campuses these days?
Yeah, so roughly, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but there's about 600 people or so that work for Focus, either on campus or at the office that I work at. Most of those, obviously, are on the college campuses, but we're a pretty big organization now. So, yeah, there's about 500 people or so that are on the college campus.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, by now, the formula, which I think in my research I found was win, build, and send, seems to have really developed and made wonderfully operational. Can you tell us what it's like to get started on a campus from your contact with the missionaries who are working on campus? What's it like to get started? What do they do?
Yeah, so it's a lot of work to be a college campus missionary. So they'll go to the college campus. If it's a new campus, it's even harder because there's no history of focus establishing any kind of relationship with students at all there yet. Focus has been on the campus for a little while, it's a little bit easier. People have an idea of who Focus is. But anyway, so they get to Focus, or they get to the college campus that Focus is at, and they basically do what's called fall outreach. So they have a ton of really big events and gatherings, really to just get to know the students and meet them. And then from there, they kind of invite them into Bible studies. Missionaries typically will have a couple Bible studies if it's a smaller campus or Focus is a little bit newer there. Campuses like Benedictine College, where Focus was actually started, there's going to be huge chains and tons of Bible studies. I don't know the exact number of Bible studies that Benedictine has, but depending on how long Focus has been there and how big the campus is, there could be quite a few Bible studies. So the missionaries will have the Bible studies, and then generally they'll take about two people or so, maybe more, and then they'll invite those people into discipleship. So they'll basically train those people that they're discipling to how to basically how to pray, how to know Christ, how to have a relationship with Him, just how to be a better human being, which is something a lot of young people aren't really learning in college. And in this kind of training, they'll also be teaching them how they can do the same thing with other people, other friends, other students on their campuses. Mm-hmm. And then they'll train them how to have their own Bible studies as well. And so there's just, like I mentioned before, kind of ripple or chain of people discipling one another in different Bible studies that these missionaries have on campus. And they'll do this the whole year during the school year.
Just by way of interjecting something that came to my mind, a lot of the young people will be coming to college having been formed by the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of Bible studies may sound appealing to those of us who are on the other side of relationship with Christ, but some of them, you know, may want to be boy and girlfriend in the most serious of ways. They might be struggling with a lot of issues of temptation and things. Do the Focus missionaries have to try to get into all of this with them as well?
Yeah, this is kind of the goal, actually. It's something that in Focus we call incarnational evangelization. And really what that means is evangelizing to people by having a personal relationship with them, a friendship with them. And this means really just sharing life with each other. So Focus missionaries will, tend to hang out with them outside of their Bible studies or outside of discipleship and really try to build this friendship and really know what's going on in the students' lives and helping them through the things that they're going through today. Mm-hmm. And it's a really hard task to try to make this happen. A lot of people don't want to be in a Bible study. They're kind of turned off by the idea of religion. They have no idea what a friendship is like and what having a real relationship with someone is like. And so Focus missionaries are kind of starting from scratch and just kind of trying to teach these students by way of example what this means, like what it is to be Catholic, what it means to have a friendship with someone, and to just be good and to be virtuous. It's a big struggle on campus these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I get into sort of the final area that I'd like to cover in our I wish we could do this a lot longer, but I had promised you a certain amount of time as our interruption on your business day. How do you like Denver and Colorado?
Oh, I love Denver so much. It's a really fun city. Lots of culture, which I love, but there's also nature, which I think the soul needs. And not everyone knows that that's like a fact, but it is. It's great to have both.
You ever get up to Estes Park?
I've been there a couple times. I haven't done any kind of skiing or anything like that, but I do love hiking, and that's a really, really beautiful area to do that.
Absolutely. If you go to Our Lady of the Mountains Parish, you'll see Deacon Tom and Dee's name on a building block down at the on the upper level as you enter the church. You can look for that as some testimony that we were there for a number of years and really loved our time in Colorado. And of course, we were rooting for the Orange during the Super Bowl. That was really pretty exciting.
Yes, sure. Well, yep, that was a great day. Great day to be in Denver.
One of the paths in my own journey has been being guided by an Irish priest who had a devotion to St. Therese of Lisieux. And I think that I read that you took her as, was it a confirmation sponsor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's my confirmation saint, and my patron saint, named after her, kind of the whole nine yards.
Yeah. Well, she is a beautiful story, and her book, The mm-hmm. Story of a Soul, has touched so many people. But one of the things that made me smile of getting ready for our time together is the picture of you with a cigar in your mouth and a shotgun and a beer at the table. How did this relationship with St. Therese work in your life? What was it about her that you like?
It's kind of interesting. I feel like a lot of people around my age, a lot of women especially, kind of have a love-hate relationship with her, or like started hating her for a long time and then eventually loved her. For me, I loved her from the very first. So my mother had a really strong devotion to her, named me after her. In fact, she like knew that she was pregnant with me because she had sort of a vision of sorts of St. Therese walking towards her carrying a baby in a blanket of roses. And that was like the first story I ever knew of St. Therese and my relationship to her. So from a really, really young age, I remember when I was 7 years old, I read Story of the Soul for the first time. Of course, I was seven. I had no idea really what it meant other than this was a girl who loved Jesus so much, and I wanted to be just like her. So I actually really wanted to be a nun when I was really little, just because I wanted to be just like St. Therese. And then as I kind of grew up and went through my teen years, where I was not so much into my faith as I was when I was really little, I kind of fell away from her a little bit, didn't really want to have much to do with her. And I just didn't really relate to her, even through my younger college years, freshman and sophomore year or so. And it was about my junior, senior year in college when I kind of started having a relationship with her again. I kind of picked up Story of the Soul again. So I was kind of in a rough place in college at one of those years at one point. And just kind of started, flipping through it a little bit and reading some of the stuff. And I just realized, like, she is exactly like me, or rather, I'm exactly like her. Like, there's so many similarities in the things that she talks about being weak and being little and just not being able to do the things that she wants to do. And I just really related to that, just feeling that weakness and not being able to love like I want to love. And, just like the longing that she felt to be close to God. So about, senior year or so is when I really started to have a relationship with her again, really starting to fall back in love with her. And I think even the last year and a half or so now, being out of college even more so, everything that I read by her, or even moments that I've had in prayer where I felt like her or her parents, St. Louis and Zoe Martin, were speaking to me, I just really feel like she has watched out for me my whole life. And is really, really close and just teaching me how to be close to Jesus like she was through her little way, which is, a really, really life-changing thing when you kind of come to know what she actually is talking about.
Mm-hmm. Therese, very reluctantly, I think we're going to have to move to a wrap-up. So I'll start with one thing. Are there any connectivity points that you'd like to share with us? And then part two, is there anything, if somebody's moved to help support your missionary work, is there some way that they can be in touch with you for that?
Sure, yeah. Just as I kind of wrap up, it's been a wonderful journey of life that I've had thus far. and being in focus now, I don't know how much longer it will be in focus, but I know that God has a huge plan for me, even if that means that it looks ordinary, like St. Therese's life. And it's kind of hidden and not really anyone knows about it. But I really have this strong sense of God has called me to use my gifts and talents, my love for beauty, my love for the church and evangelizing to people, to be part of my mission in life. In whatever way that looks, I have no idea, but who really ever does. So yeah, it's been really great to kind of share a little snippet of my story with you and with your listeners. And if anyone is interested in supporting me, you can email me. That would be probably the easiest way to do it because, or you can actually look me up on the Focus website, focus.org, and then you can search for a missionary and then type in my name. And that would be another way to contact me. But yeah, I would love to, if that's something that anyone is interested in, love to build a relationship and share more with you about what it is I do in Focus and what Focus does. And yeah, it would be greatly appreciated.
So if people are going to use the Focus .org, it's F-O-C-U-S, focus.org/, and then your name or missionary, how do people do that?
Yeah, right now it's the URL that you can go to is focusonline.org/go-to/ Therese Aucker, T-H-E-R-E-S-E, and then my last name, A-A-K-E-R, and it's all one word in the URL. That's the direct URL to my missionary support page.
And I do know that you're on a couple other places. Do you want to do email or Facebook or anything else?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can find me anywhere on social media, Twitter, Facebook, email, whatever.
All right. Well, Therese Aucker, this has been a fast 30-some minutes. It's been a delight.
It has.
and it's also been inspiring and touching. I truly hope we can stay somewhat in touch and keep up with
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and your journey. Thank you very much, and we'll keep you in our prayers.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as you heard several times, her name is Therese Aucker. Dee, you know, I sometimes enjoy time spent with young people, and I sure enjoyed the interview time with her, and I do hope we stay in touch. She's a sweet young lady, and I love what she's doing with Focus Ministries. Well, Dee and I went out for Valentine's dinner with good friends Jim and Candy last night. We had a very nice dinner, a lot of laughs and whatever. And then today, Dee and I had a little dust-up. And our Married for Life segment, Miss D, is realize that neither of you is perfect. Who picked this? Did you pick that?
I did.
Nobody's perfect. Sometimes common sayings are rooted in eternal truth. God's word agrees wholeheartedly with this one. The Bible says there is none righteous, no, not one. Romans 3, verse 10. We've all made mistakes, we've all done wrong, and we've all fallen short of God's standard of perfection. God is the only one who is righteous, perfect, and good. Both marriage partners are flawed, sinful people. No matter how hard we try to make our marriage perfect, we will have to deal with personal failings and hurt feelings. Hello, Dee. Unless we want to carry around a lot of anger and resentment for the rest of our lives. This sort of relates to Sonia's segment on healing the father wound that she did. And I could ask Dee, but I don't want to put her on the spot. I won't ask her how many times she has said, I'm sorry, in the years that we've been married. But I just had to say it a little bit ago, not very long ago. So there you are. There is good news. God's ways work. God's way works. He has chosen to handle failure according to his good nature, which is gracious, patient, merciful, compassionate, and loving. Although he is greatly offended by wrongdoing, he immediately and freely pardons anyone who asks for forgiveness, and he never recalls it again. All right, Miss D, I think
you completely skipped over the couple that was.
Yeah, I know.
But I caught the date of the date that they were married. They were married in 1942.
Is that
That's
right?
The year I was born.
Oh my!
Which
heavens.
Means they've been married how many years?
I know. All right, we've run long on this Catholic Vitamins, but I hope that you have found the show inspiring with our guest and with Sonia.
We've got Vita Scrabble for next time. Catholic Vitamin V. V as in Victor, only that's not the word.
Okay, all right.
Begins with V, ends with E, 9 letters.
If you take a guess, and if you are correct, we have some candy, which we will send to you. Even if you've given up candy, we'll give you a dispensation.
We got to send out these Catholic Vitamin Sweet Treats before it gets hot, before the hot weather comes.
Exactly. Dear friends, that is Catholic Vitamin U for...
Could you tell them where to send their guests?
Oh, thank you. Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Please send your guests and do an email to catholicvitamins@gmail.com.
Thank you, Dee. So this has been show number 305. And this was Unload. We hope that you will unload by going to your penance service in your parish this Lent and then pick up the habit of doing it every month. Dee, love you. We'll see you on the next show.
Bye.
Finally, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Vitamins.